Welcome, welcome to Both Sides of the Aisle. My name is Matt Lust. I'm filling in for Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is a Young Politico episode, and I am joined on the right by...
Drew Rigby.
Hey, Drew, welcome to the show. Over on the left, we have...
Sasha Lex Morgan.
Sasha, good to be on radio with you again. It's been a little bit.
It's good to see you.
Yeah, it's good to see you, too. This is fun. So we're gonna start by talking about some national things. And... this is national, but with a Utah flavor, a Utah-Massachusetts flavor, Mitt Romney. There's a lot of stuff going on with Mitt Romney, and it's like, where to start? He's been called a Democrat secret asset. He's been tweeting under, this is my favorite, a secret Twitter account with the name Pierre Delecto. There's a lot going on. So let's start with him. Let's start with the Twitter account, actually, that we're alluding to. So he has been hiding under under the name Pierre Delecto, the secret Twitter account. And he's been monitoring political things. It started back way in 2011, and he's like been defending himself. Like, what's up with that? What's going on here? Sasha, you look like you want to jump in on this.
I find it so funny. I mean, the fact that it's been going on since he ran for president.
Right.
The name in and of itself, like Pierre Delecto, that's just spectacular. It really is. And I think it's certainly a tactic you can take for defending yourself and standing up to the Trump brand of Republicanism, but I don't know how effective I'd say it is.
Yeah, right? I mean, now that it's come to light all these years later and that it didn't come to light during the presidential campaign is pretty weird. I mean, what are your thoughts on that, man?
Yeah, I don't know what to think exactly. I would agree with Sasha. It wasn't an effective decision, and I wonder how this thought originated in his mind back in 2010, 2011, whatever it was. But I don't know. I can't blame a person for wanting to maybe hide themselves for different reasons behind a pen name of sorts to defend themselves, whether they're on the right or the left side. But it's an interesting move, and I'm sure it's probably one he regrets.
Possibly. It creates this interesting discussion of, you know, during... You know, in this age that we live in, this digital age, you know, what's real, what's fake? And I'm not like talking about like fake news, but it's like, how do you know what people saying online is real? We get into these echo chambers and, you know, you could be out retweeting or resharing or posting something three different times from three different accounts and it could gain traction. So, I mean, is it right that elected officials, this isn't the only time we've seen elected officials with fake accounts. I mean, is this a good thing? I mean, it doesn't seem like it, but Sasha, you look like you're thinking over there. Is this something that we should be happy with?
I don't know if I'd necessarily categorize it as a good thing or a bad thing, but I think it's a very human thing. I think it's really interesting for Romney, a really interesting humanizing aspect where it's like, oh, there's this guy and he just wants to be on Twitter and not have to be, you know, official Mitt Romney, candidate for president, senator from Utah. So,
yeah, that's true. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm just surprised maybe a person of his stature would take it that far and feeling maybe so insecure and vulnerable that he or she would have to do something like that is maybe what's interesting about it to me. I mean, this guy's been successful his entire life, and anything he's done, what gives him the insecurity?
Running for president.
Yeah, right. Correct. I don't mean to take it that far, but maybe I'm wrong in thinking that the feeling originated in an insecurity or anything like that. I don't know why. It's just this speaks more to me personally by way of like it's an interesting move for someone of that stature to do.
Yeah,
it doesn't make sense to me.
That is interesting. Well, I want to stay on the topic of Twitter. Friday night, this last Friday night, President Trump, he shared an ad that was promoted by Club for Growth, and it essentially tore into Senator Romney, called him a Democrat secret asset. And, you know, this is really kind of an interesting thing to me. He's been vocal against the president. The president hasn't liked that. And, you know, now we have the president like retweeting a video where the narrator says that his cover is blown and he's been exposed by news reports, right? That he is the Democrat secret asset. Sasha, are you welcoming with him with open arms into the left? And do you feel that he is a Democrat secret asset?
You know, the Democrats are a big tent party, but no, to my knowledge, we have not been recruiting Republican senators to secretly do our bidding. No, he's not a secret asset. He disagrees with the president, like, which I would argue that more people should. But no, he's just he's just trying to live his own moral code, whatever that is.
Yeah, whatever that is. What are the thoughts over on the right side or the centrist side?
Yeah. I don't know. I think this is one area where I have to admit that Trump is very effective, is in undermining people and this narrative of fake news and whatever. I mean, he's got a great following and people buy into that. And so whether Senator Romney is a secret asset or not, I would probably disagree with that, obviously. But these conspiracy theories, just like they're meaningful for a lot of these people, right? And so it sticks, and he's very effective at undermining people and isolating them maybe politically and you know, strategically working them towards the outside. And I think Trump is willing to do things that other people aren't, right? His moral scope is vast. And so that benefits him in these types of situations. So,
there's a wide spectrum.
It's politics.
Well,
you know,
what's really interesting to me about this is, like you said, people buy into it, right? Like, I have had conversations with a lot of Utahns that are just like, I'm so upset with that rhino Mitt Romney. And it's interesting to me to hear that, because I agree, actually, Sasha, that he's just kind of living his own moral code. He has been very, very, in my opinion, principled, right, when it's come to things like impeachment. And I want to talk about that, because that's got potentially some big ramifications, especially in the Utah CD4 election with Representative Ben McAdams. But that's, you know, that's how I feel on things. Yeah. I see you want to jump in.
One thing I will say about Mitt Romney is the man was governor of Massachusetts. He was moderate enough to get elected governor of Massachusetts. Utahns then elected him their senator. Like, what did y'all think you were getting?
Overwhelmingly elected him, right?
Yes.
Like, it wasn't like, you know.
It wasn't like he squeaked in.
I'm not convinced that they wouldn't elect him again. Right?
Oh,
when re-elections come by, like, so he might have a low approval rating. But I'm not convinced that the people of Utah actually wouldn't, like, you know, vote him in again.
Yeah.
Even if the vote was, like, next year.
Yeah. You know? Tomorrow, right? Yeah. Knowing everything you know now. Yeah. Well, and whether you disagree or not with what he's done or what Senator Mike Lee has done, you know, he's certainly, like I said, I feel like he's been pretty on the same course with Donald Trump. Okay, so I want to switch subjects, though, a little bit. I brought up impeachment. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to throw this out there, and it's kind of like a hot take. I'm throwing a grenade in the middle of the room. We'll see what people say. I think, you know, whether ideologically you think impeachment is a good idea and that the president should be impeached and that, you know, Democrats pushing for impeachment is a good thing, that's one thing. But from a campaign perspective, it is such a dangerous playing with fire thing. And here's why I think that, right? Say that you are you're moderate or you're more liberal and you're really excited to turn out in the 2020 election to vote Donald Trump out. Well, let's say you impeach the president. Let's say you're even successful in removing him from office. Well, then you just like removed one of the biggest like motivations to show
Correct.
Up and vote.
And people don't come out.
And then people don't come out.
Oh, God, I completely disagree.
Okay, but then here's let's
no,
take
theory.
Take yeah. So okay. Here, take the flip side. And I'm really excited to hear what you're going to say about this, Sasha. Take the flip side. Say you go to impeach him. You're not successful at all. And all you do is just make a ton of Republicans mad, and it incentivizes them to show up. I just think for the 2020 election, impeachment is no good for the Democrats.
I think the question of impeachment shouldn't be approached from a campaign tactics perspective.
Sure.
Like,
that's
there
fair.
Are bigger issues at play than how we think this is going to affect hypothetical turnout. And, you
so
know.
Principled, Sasha. So principled.
That's me. No, but it's this whole hypothetical exercise of if we fail at impeaching the president, if we impeach in the House and then fail in the Senate, there's a whole conversation to be had from there of, okay, well, how did your senator vote? It's not just the White House that's up in 2020, right? We have Senate races and we have House races. And those are also important. And I don't think that not having Donald Trump as the boogeyman at the top of the ticket is going to depress Democratic turnout. That certainly wasn't the case in 18. There wasn't a presidential race on the ballot and Democrats turned out then.
But I would say there were a ton of propositions, right? We've got a local cannabis expert us. And I feel like that was one of the biggest reasons for turnout, right? So, but let's keep going on. What are your thoughts there with impeachment? And I want to talk about cannabis in the next segment.
I think it's too early to tell how it will impact the actual campaigns themselves. I mean, I could see it playing out both ways. I that entire process, no one's going to go unscathed. Like, both sides are going to get, you're going to get bruised and cut up pretty badly, I would think. But obviously, going back to the principles and the purpose of the process of impeachment, and I can't blame either side, whether it was Republicans impeaching a Democrat or vice versa. Like, you've got to have some type of moral compass. And when lines are crossed, like, it is what it is. And I think you got to be able to stand up regardless of the party and who the person is, and proceed. So, I mean, if the guy's guilty of what he's done, it's, yeah, I guess that's why we elect officials.
Yeah.
We got to make hard decisions. So.
Well, and I totally agree that, you know, you can't look at something on that scale from a campaign perspective. Some interesting, you know, piece of trivia is that when the Republicans brought impeachment proceedings against Bill Clinton, obviously we saw the pendulum swing. Usually you have the opposite party of the president make gains in midterm elections. That happened with Bill Clinton. Democrats won big after Republicans tried it. I thought that was interesting. Anyway, we've got lots to talk about. Stay with us. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. When we come back, we're going to talk about some things close to home. Keep listening.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
I'm Sasha Lux Morgan on the left.
I'm Drew Rigby on the right.
And I'm Matt Lusty in the political middle. We're back with Both Sides of the Aisle. We closed our last segment talking about a few things that are happening nationally. And I want to talk about one more national topic before we shift locally. So just recently, Bernie Sanders had a rally in New York, and he there received the AOC endorsement. It was bequeathed to him, I suppose. It was, you know, she's pulling for Bernie. But the big thing about that was there was 26,000 people there. Largest rally so far for the Democrats. Really impressive. Exciting, maybe gaining some momentum there. More than just talking about this rally, and I'd love to hear from you guys if you have a comment specifically about that rally. But more than that rally, I want to talk about how is it that we are in at the end of October 2019, and we still have 16 candidates for the presidency on the Democratic side. And it's just, I don't want to call it crazy town in that, like, things are crazy or the policy is crazy. I mean, some of us here might disagree, but it's just crazy that we have that many people. When and how are we going to narrow it down? So, Sasha, since this is talking about the Democrats, we're going to start with you. What are your thoughts on what's going on with the Democrat presidential candidates?
Honestly, I think it's really exciting that we have that many Democrats running for president. The debates, they've been large. There are a lot of people on stage, and it makes it a little bit hard to follow. But I think people are actually able to have real substantive debates about policy and about different ways of governing. And so I think it's great that we've got 16 people running. I think we're already starting to narrow. There are candidates who have already dropped out. And as we get closer to the Iowa caucuses and Super Tuesday, I think we're going to start to see the field narrow even more.
Yeah, totally. I would agree. I think it's a function of maybe the political atmosphere currently. I think there's so many people pissed off at Trump who are willing to take him on personally. And I mean, that 16, is that how many we have?
We're at right now. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember that happening on either side of the aisle for
It's been a long time. Obviously, in 2016, there was kind of a vacuum after Mitt Romney,
correct,
you know, said he wasn't going to run. And the Republicans were kind of, well, who's going to take on the mantle? And, you know, none of the candidates can shake that, you know, Donald Trump had a high floor of like 33% of the Republican Party at that time. So my question, though, is of those 16 candidates, can anyone beat Donald Trump? Mitt Romney was quoted recently as saying, you know, even with the feuds that he's had with the president, that he thinks that it's going to be very, very hard to beat him. There's been a couple of tests done. I'm trying to remember, not the Moody Index. It's another name. It's escaping me. But anyway, they run scenarios. And in all of those, they see Donald Trump winning. And they've put Republican or other Democratic nominees, Joe Biden, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, up as the potential rival. And they see Donald Trump winning in some of these scenarios. So, you know, is that going to be the case? Sasha, obviously, I see you ready to just like jump into this.
You know what? I'm going to take a pass. I'm going to let Drew go first.
Okay.
Let's hear it, Drew. Yeah. So look, I'll go first. And let me be very clear. I'm not a Republican who supports Trump. But I have to admit that I do think he has a good chance of winning re-election. They came out in waves the first time around. And I feel like those people have been emboldened in how they vote and how passionate they are about continuing this legacy of Trump. And so I would like to see someone else, but and that's not me being left leaning or anything like that. I don't identify with Trump as a Republican, but I do think he has a good shot at
the power of the incumbency. Right, he's not fighting 15 other people for donor dollars. He's not, you know. So anyway, but Sasha, let's go to you.
No matter who we nominate, that person is going to have to fight to win. And I think to say that, oh, there's no way a Democrat could win in 2020. That's 2016 was so close. Like, if you look at the vote totals in those key battleground states,
it's like 80,000 between all of them, right?
It's
not a lot.
It's nothing. And, you know, Democrats won the popular vote. That, you know, that doesn't get you the presidency, but it's also not something to discount.
Who do you think is the best candidate? Not who would you vote for, but who do you think has the best shot of winning?
Ooh,
out
this
of
is
left?
Interesting. Can you say this out loud as chair with the
so
Salt Lake County Young Dems?
Statistically speaking, who do you think?
I got to give a disclaimer. Right. In my role as president of the Young Democrats of Utah, I am officially neutral on intra-party races.
Correct.
And I will hold to that in any audience. That being said, I think that Biden, Sanders, and Warren, all three,
obviously,
have a really solid chance.
I think it's Biden, obviously, I think, has the best shot at winning. But see, I think he's also the softest out of all the candidates. I think everyone likes to think they love him. But when it comes to time to vote, I don't know that he has the pull to make it happen. In between amongst those three, because I think, like, if you're going to fight fire with fire, like, go with Sanders or Warren versus Trump, right? Then we have, like, polar opposites that are equal.
The three are all running very different campaigns.
Yeah.
I think that's a really fair assessment.
But Trump is public enemy number one for all three of them, right?
So I think all 16 of
them. Yeah, absolutely. So that's what I'm saying is, like, that's where I'm so interested in seeing how those three play out amongst themselves and who actually gets that nomination amongst the Democrats.
That is going to be fascinating, because those are definitely the three that are out in front right now, and everybody else. Pete Buttigieg is close, but there's definitely, you know, people chasing those three. So it's going to be interesting to see who comes out of that. I want to bring things a little bit closer to home. First, we're going to talk about taxes. So legislators are targeting a December special session. They put out kind of some suggestions, right, on what there was a tax committee that went around and met with people all around the state. They had, you know, 8 town halls in different places throughout, you know, the Wasatch Front, Southern Utah, Eastern Utah, Northern Utah. And out of all of this talk, since the session when tax reform was being proposed, they finally put out some suggestions. And now they're looking at a December special session. This has a lot of people really interested. And one of the things that has been most maybe controversial is a tax on food. Putting the tax back on food. So want to hear what your guys' thoughts are, if that's something that's going to go or not go. So let's start with you, Drew. What do you think?
This food tax was repealed, wasn't it just repealed from Utah state taxes like 5-6 years ago?
Yeah, relatively recently.
So it's not like we weren't used to it for our entire lives, the 6.8, or no, it was 3.2 or something like that. But it's considered a progressive tax, right? Which is basically regressive tax, which is a bigger burden on the poor rather than the wealthy, right? Because it's a flat tax, everyone pays the same, but by percentage, it's more of a burden to other people. So your question is whether I think it'll come back or not?
Yeah, and whether or not you think that they're going to have the political will to get that through, you know, the House and the Senate and have the governor sign it into law.
Yeah, I think there's probably a good chance if they want to run and bet on that horse that it's probably going to happen. I mean, let's be honest about Utah politics. Once something is adopted and endorsed by a certain party,
it's been a year-long process. It's been a year-long process to get there, Sasha.
I am a Democrat, but I can still do math. So
I like that. No, I like that thought. But what are your thoughts? This has come out, like I said, for almost a year, and this has been one of the suggestions. Now, to be fair, in the suggestion, there's a tax credit. Right. So if you're under the poverty line, that you can get a tax credit back. Right. But a lot of people have said, well, how does a tax credit in April help people get by in the meantime,
that's
right?
That's absolutely true. I mean, I personally, as an individual, am completely opposed to a tax on food. We should not be taxing like the bare necessities of life. People need to eat. And this is going to come as a burden on low-income families and families with young children. And if Utah is a family values state, as the Republican Party likes to purport, live those values out. Mm-hmm. Think about families and think about who these policies are going to be affecting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not saying I necessarily support it, but if we're being honest, like, they need to create more revenue to pay for bills, so it's got to come from somewhere. So if the question is, do we think it'll... If it's likely to happen, if they endorse this, if they think this is a solution, will it happen? Probably.
Yeah.
There's probably better ways to do it.
I would jump in here and say, you know, I know that the Speaker of the House and the Senate President have been very specific about saying, you know, we don't want to generate more revenue in that they want to drive up taxes. But Utah has some really funky laws about how taxes can be spent. You have a constitutional earmark that says, you know, a certain amount of money always needs to go towards education. You have, you know, so anyway, so this is one of the things that they're looking at when they make this change is also dropping the income tax, right? And some people say, well,
do we need a tax cut or do we not need a tax cut?
Yeah,
if we
need
more revenue,
right?
Let's be honest about that and not cut income taxes and raise taxes on the poor. That's backwards. It's ridiculous.
So it's going to be interesting to see how the debate kind of goes. I'm interested to follow that. We've got a few minutes left and I want to shift gears though to something the capital city, Salt Lake City. We have an election bearing down on us. This is a nonpartisan. Nobody can see that I'm doing air quotes with nonpartisan election, but I am doing air quotes.
Very
and this
dramatically.
This is very dramatically. This is one of the biggest elections in the state for Democrats, right? I mean, the person that always wins this is more ideologically liberal. And a poll just came out that shows Aaron Mendenhall leading Luis Escamilla 42-37%. So a 5-point lead, 21% undecided. What's going to happen? What are the ramifications? Sasha, do you want to venture into this? This is something I think you can venture into because
it's
not partisan, right?
I am actually allowed to have opinions, and I do. I think it's – I don't think we're going to know on election night.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be way too close to call. I think both campaigns are working incredibly hard. Personally, I'm supporting Aaron.
Okay.
Just to get my own biases out there. But I think it's really exciting that we have this level of competition, that we have a tightly contested election. And I know, and at least on Aaron Mendenhall's side, they're working hard for every vote.
Yeah. Yeah, Drew.
Yeah, interesting. I don't really have a dog in the fight here. But I actually did grow up in the Avenues, and so this has been a political contest that I've always been interested in going back at a young age because of the people that, you know, the candidates that end up at the very end and end up winning this mayoral position are always interesting. So I think Aaron will probably pull it off, but it's always interesting to see how this Salt Lake mayoral race plays out.
Yeah, it's a huge position. It's extremely influential. It's one that works closely with the legislature. It works closely with the powers of the state. You know, from an outside perspective, I don't live in Salt Lake City. I work in Salt Lake City. It's interesting to see. I think Aaron has been extremely effective from the grassroots level. You know, she kind of shocked people. Everybody had June DeBacchus pegged in the primary is going through, and she worked really, really hard. And so it'll be interesting to see if Luis can overcome that. I've always thought that grassroots power in campaigns is more powerful than people think. You can have $6 million, but if you have 4 million people working for you that are, you know, pounding the pavement makes a difference. Yeah. So we're coming to the end of the show. This is the section where we talk about gripes. And gripes can be anything. It doesn't have to be political. We want to hear what's on people's minds. So, Sasha, we're going to reach over to you. What's weighing on you? What's annoying you? What's frustrating you?
I'm going to go with the political gripe.
Okay, I like it.
I'm going to go with badly targeted and poorly designed political mail.
Ooh,
that's
yep.
funny.
And I'm not going to ascribe it to any candidate. And actually, the worst of it, I haven't even seen in my house, in my city council district or for my mayor's race. But folks, hire a graphic designer.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing when it's pretty bad. I love that. I love that. Drew, what are you feeling?
Yeah, mine's going to be political too, and it's going to be my own party. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay, you're just going to say there's a gripe right now, undisclosed gripe.
For sure.
Oh, that's awesome. I appreciate that. You know, my gripe is, so I just recently moved out to South Jordan. My gripe isn't anything about South Jordan. I love it out there, but my gripe is infrastructure investment, right? You know, yeah, I mean, it's like, it's a long drive. Yeah, every time. I'm stopping on Bangor. I'm hitting those everywhere that has a light. Now, granted, they're trying to turn a lot of those so it's more freeway-like, but I'm going to like call out a county right now, Utah County. Utah County, we can't just keep adding lanes to a massive freeway. We need to start investing in infrastructure there because growth is coming. Yep. That's the biggest issue in my mind for the next 15 years is growth and how do we handle it. This has been a fascinating discussion. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. My name's Matt Luss. I'm in the political middle. I've been joined by Sasha Lux Morgan on the left, Drew Rigby on the right, and I want to give a special thanks to our producer, Anthony Skoma. Thanks for listening.